The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Been since the very first day. I still miss Gombe summer every evening and the sailing boats beneath the bridge so high. I feel the sun and my heart within me leaving to come back to Nassau, to the sun, the sea and the sky. Oh,
island boy,
you know my heart is still in the Caribbean.
Island boy,
I still hear my girlfriend say, hey, land of the palmy beaches, where your heart has always been. Very first day, I hear cowbells and the drums on New Year's morning, and I smell hibiscus.
Good morning this morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk, all day. Well, welcome back. It is Monday, the 7th of March, 2022, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. And today, on the clock, we actually have an island boy whose heart is still in the Caribbean, even though he is officially a Bahamian in the diaspora. So stay tuned to the show. Got a little housekeeping. I want to remind you that On The Clock has a WhatsApp account and group. Add us on 1-242-428-0719 or join on the invite link on the On The Clock Facebook account and page. Also, you can tune into today and every day's conversation. We're live on Channel 969 on Cable Bahamas, that's Channel 969, and also on Flow Channel 612, that's Flow Channel 612, or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices and listen to us on our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. Remember, you could text us on the Guardian Radio text line, that's 422-GR96. 422-4796, and that's powered by BTC. Standard text rates apply. You can call in at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. Now, normally today's episode would be on this week of the Bahamas, right? Where we delve into all of the things that went on the television show. But this week, we're going to ask that same question, but from somebody who lives on the other side of the wall, that boundary we call our border, and see what it looks like from the outside looking in. There's lots in the paper today. I don't know if we're going to be able, if we're going to engage it in our conversation, but if you get your Guardian and you look at the front of the fold, it says, call it something other than rape. And I just want to say, why? If it's rape, let's call it rape. Let's stop playing games. If that's what it is, let's call it that. Now, mind you, I understand there's lots to be considered. There's lots of conversation to have. And we have to have that conversation. We just ain't gonna have it right now. I just need you to know, Honorable Wayne Monroe, we're going to be talking about you. Not just the issue, but we can be talking about what you said, and not just what you said. See, because the law is a complicated thing. And it's not just what's said, it's how it's said, right? It's like justice must not just be done, it must be seen to be done. And that's where we get back to the question of why call it something other than what it is. But we're going to put that aside. That is for another day. International Women's Day is tomorrow. And throughout the week and the month of March, we will be having lots of discussions so that people could weigh in, so that people could share how they feel, and so we could get a real sense of what we think about each other and how we feel about each other. Now, let's get on to the show. My guest today, very special person. Like, not often do I get somebody in the studio who I don't talk too hard on the campaign trail, but I always have to measure myself. Somebody who is authorized to pinch me on sight. And so I know a lot of Bahamians grow up with that culture, but I wonder if we really remember it and understand what it's really about, right? Community is an important thing. And as a social justice human rights advocate, and as a radio host, and as a political satirist, as a comedian, right? I always, before I speak, have to measure what I'm saying against, or weigh the impact, what I'm saying, right, on the impact on the community, the people who may be affected or impacted by my language. In fact, I can tell you all a little secret. Every time I'm in my car and somebody cut a flick, make a movie, you know, jump on the sidewalk to overtake me, things like that. Every time that happened, guess what? It's somebody I know. It is somebody I know, or that I know that I am related to, which then immediately causes me to moderate my behavior and my response to them, because I know we all empty with each other. That's a good thing. That is a good thing. It doesn't mean that we shut up or we don't say anything, but it means we remember that we are linked by more than this, just this one incident or issue or conflict we're dealing with right now. And so I want to introduce this guest and let you all know that he is a part of my community, but I come to give out as many pinches today as I expect to receive. Good morning, Dr. Charles Clark. How are you?
I'm blessed to be alive, like many of everybody else who is hearing this voice and listening to this program.
Absolutely.
And good morning, Bahamas.
Yeah. You know, it's a traditional Bahamian greeting. I don't want you to lose any of them things while you were abroad.
Listen, I always stay grounded. You know, one of the things that what I've realized in this world is that the world is flatter. Because of social networking, I know just what's happening in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. Sometimes even before Bahamians on the ground.
Yes.
And certainly with social and where you actually have better communication and almost immediate, real time.
Yeah.
So I try to engage in that process, and I don't get distracted with what's around me. I see what's going on, but then again, I'm grounded in my roots.
Good.
My navel string, bury here, man. Ain't nothing change.
I just saw a post that reminded me of a traditional Caribbean like greeting, and the young person say Caribbean people still saying good night to greet you, right? And I was like, they better be. Mm-hmm. That's the song of my people. Mm-hmm. So being a Bahamian abroad, mm-hmm. right? How easy is it to stay rooted in the culture? The first time I went to New York, my cousin tell me, don't look nobody in the eye.
Yeah.
Even though that's a Bahamian rule.
Right. Well, I'll give you two anecdotal cases. When I was a youth and going to school, university for the first time, around about 18, going to college in the United States. The minute I got on campus, within that first month, for some strange reason, I found they speak the Americans.
Yeah.
And then within that month, I listened to myself and I said, listen, catch yourself, man. This is seeing you. And from then on, no matter where I go, I stay grounded and rooted in who I am. Mm-hmm. I met another chap. Forgive me for using one or two words, because I actually...
But you find that Bahamians use chap.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, who many years ago when I was living in the United Kingdom and I came back here and I met his father, and... he came to visit,
uh-huh.
and He starts speaking. So I touch his father. I say, so where he, you know? So he says, his father said, well, listen, he in the UK. He's been there for about the past year. And I say, any song like that? And I say, I've been living in the UK for about 3 years. So his father wrap him up, was apologetic and say, well, that's because he actually in the theatrical area, so he have to learn to speak like that code and everything. Mm-hmm. But I say, well, maybe so, but I'm in the healthcare business where I have to speak to people on a daily basis with the clinic. So I find it interesting when people change their inflections right. But I ain't gonna knock them, you know, that's how they go.
Now, this could be a whole separate conversation. Like, you know, that I'm gonna pull people mm-hmm. from the diaspora mm-hmm. into, right? Mm-hmm. But when you make you juxtapose the Bahamian assimilation or acculturation mm-hmm. process mm-hmm. when they go abroad mm-hmm. to other Caribbean countries, right? Mm-hmm. Then you realize that that maybe a lot has been lost in translation, but initially it was viewed as a strategy. Right?
Like, perhaps, yes.
That we will be more successful if we look and sound like them.
I'll tell you something to that.
Yeah.
That may be how we think it is, but I'll tell you something, at least in the United Kingdom, they appreciate your distinction and who you are.
Yeah.
Mind you, being a Bahamian has its benefits, because not... The minute you said you're from the Bahamas, everybody eyes get glossy and light up, yeah. All right? But certainly I found that once you maintain your integrity, once you maintain who you are, they receive you a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's been beneficial.
I even
advanced some of my initiatives and et cetera.
Yeah. But culturally now is problematic because the translation of culture, people aren't really rooted in it. Like, Bahamian culture hasn't taken off in Great Britain or the US the same way.
Interesting, Lord. But let me show you something. Yeah. Bahamians in the UK, you know, I didn't think that there was that many.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty.
Plenty there.
Oh, plenty
but
there.
Interestingly, and the only time we get together, or at least we see them, is when the embassy house has a function, and that was pre-COVID. Then we catch up with them, but there's a lot of them who go to college there or school there, doing law or whatever it is. But there's a significant amount of them who are settled there. Yeah. And I only come to realize this when we had one or two processes, and I come to find, I look around and say, you've been living here, or your daughter living here, or your...
Mm-hmm. Now, it's not
but
a...
We haven't created a strong... association for one or two other reasons, which is I'd rather not get into here at this time.
Yeah. It's not a segue, because one of the questions I want to ask you about if we get into the conversation is the drain.
And
from the perspective of a Bahamian in the diaspora, what are some of the ways that we can capture? But before we get there, right, mm-hmm. It'll be a great segue a little later. I need you to introduce yourself.
Oh,
to see,
there we go.
I know you because you were at one point vying for candidacy.
The Gold Coast Senans.
Yeah, boy, look here now. That makes sense now when you say it like that, yeah, right? That makes sense.
The Gold Coast.
And so I got to know you, but introduce yourself to the people.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm a native boy. I'm Dr. Charles Arthur Clark. Hailed from my heritage, actually, from Exuma and Andres, Fresh Creek and the Mangrove Key. And, you know, my formative years was actually on the eastern side in Fox Hill area. So that's a lot of my networking there. Subsequently, I'm a GHSer. The GHS, by the way, one of the latter years. And professionally, I'm a physician. I'm a urosurgeon by trade, fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons of England.
Mm-hmm.
And even more latterly, was actually president of the Bahamas Doctors Union, and tried to actually, during that template, that wasn't really what I wanted to do, but I mean, I recognized when I went into the office that they didn't know what I asked a simple question and no one could give me an answer. And then I said, listen, I might as well show the value of what this organization is.
But listen, I'm going to ask you a question now. Where is the Bahamas Doctors Union? Because we've
they've
heard
been
from
frustrated.
We've heard from the senior consulting physicians. We've heard from the nurses union throughout the pandemic, engaging the discourse, challenging policy decisions. But I'm not sure if I heard anything from the
beginning. They've been frustrated and they've been overshadowed. And you know, when you've been browbeat so long that you don't recognize... Maybe because of my exposure elsewhere, because I came in, I first of all did medicine as a senior person. I was in my late 20s. So I had already had some world experience. And so I'm not going to be pushed around and browbeaten, especially when the articles say this and we have I'm going to push that agenda. And at that time, I tried to, and I think I did to some extent. I only took that leap of going into offering myself for, at a higher level because I recognize that, listen, we needed somebody on the inside to pull us up rather than actually,
Your mother and my mother have been to the same school of common sense. Mm-hmm. They train volunteerism into us. And when you see a need and you think you could fill it, step in.
No, I mean, I had been asked many times to offer myself for one or two other communities. And I said, no, it wasn't time, la, 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 la. I had the cheddar. I work in the government capacity. I never really developed a private practice because I was committed to public service.
Yes.
And I was comfortable. We all come from humble backgrounds, all right? Yeah. But I was in chafing, all right? So I always had a long-term plan. So when I was offered this ladder, at least that ladder opportunity, I said, listen, I recognized that there were some people with good intentions in administration who were prepared to do what needed to be done. But a lot of the policymakers and the people who could make things happen, we needed somebody on the inside to pull the physician, the quote-unquote junior doctors, up rather than have their backs bent.
Yeah.
Because everybody was just bending them. And as you can see, as you just said, you hear about everybody else, but you don't hear about them anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that was really sad, when I saw them standing out in the rain that day in Rossum Square again to get a message over under the previous administration, and I said to myself, boy, listen, I really hope that messaging resonates, that picture, that actually have some traction. Mm-hmm. But lo and behold, COVID came in, and I guess everything get confuddled, and next thing they get pushed right in the back.
A system already under pressure, taking on more pressure, and basically in triage mode, right?
There you go.
So living abroad, right? And working and living abroad, it must feel like you wake in the future.
Well, this was I've been over in the UK twice before, and I never wanted to stay. So that when I came home that last time, that was because I always wanted to be able to, in the position to go in my yard, pick my golf, go in the sea. My wife always asked me, why aren't you staying? Because she believed, like, my mindset was like everybody else who come to the UK, they get fascinated by lifestyle and they won't stay. Yeah. And I said, no, man, I got a home. I always packed up and go. So this third time was because I was trying to not position myself, but I had actually contacts from over there. And I was actually trying to say, how can I help these junior doctors get a footstep in the United Kingdom? So I had some doors opening up for them over there already. Mm-hmm. Certainly if I had matriculated to that esteem or that august body. But lo and behold, I had to bail out on it because when my party lost the election, then I had to reposition myself in a way because I had obligations that I needed to sustain. So it doesn't really bling me or doesn't blind me for living in the... London is a lovely country, don't get me wrong.
First of all, the Queen is my cousin. So one-sixth of all of that is ours.
Yeah, well, we need Tapo on the show and let her know that, listen, but I hear some of the family members coming over. So we need to have that conversation with them when they come. William A.
No, we need to have it before they come because I have a feeling we get paid for them to come. But listen, y'all are comfortable. Thanks.
I hope
William is okay with that.
Well, you know, me and the wife, as it was coming up... Listen, there's a serious market in the UK to visit the Bahamas. And you can't hardly get on the plane. The plane is booked solid, and the prices are up there.
Yeah.
And even though Virgin is offering a complimentary package, it is still competitively priced. I was saying on this trip coming on, and we used to have Air Bahamas, I think, fly to Germany and Luxembourg. How come we can't have them fly in the Heathrow?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You understand?
But listen, that's important for me because while you have been working on ideas to create a channel and access for young Bahamian talent, professional talent, to get to develop nations where they could grow their skills, I want you to tie a string onto them so we could pull them back.
Of course. That was, well, that goes without saying. Because when I, even now, the hospital that I've worked at, I'm working at now, my chief is actually the deputy director of education. And I had this conversation with him no longer than last month. A Bahamian young lady was over there. She was doing a seminar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have goodwill. Listen, man, I trained with this brother from years back. All right?
Yeah.
So we could speak on a level. And he told me, he said, listen, so he called me Charles. Said, Charles, if she had written a week or earlier, I would have hired her on the spot. The only reason I got aware of her was because of another physician who called me up on the sidebar and said, listen, this young lady coming over, see if you could do, she'd get an attachment. Yeah. So I spoke to my chief and he said, if she had, because we had just had interviews. Yeah. And in fact, even though I just took on this job, they had me as part of the interview panel. So
look here. So maybe what we need in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is a team of handlers to handle young professionals and students, yes, to ensure that they could maximize their quote-unquote placements,
of
maximize
course.
Their opportunities for the sake of the development. Now, this is very non-democratic. Like, we segue in into some sort of, I don't know if it's authoritarian, but I'm down for that, right?
Mm-hmm. In fact, I think it's very important if we're going to actually have a transformer. And we have many in the diaspora in many different capacities. I have a friend who's actually an executive. He's probably listening to the show now. He was supposed to participate, but he has some meetings. He's one of the executive members of Chase in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Top branch, top big brass. And he is also of that mindset that, listen, if you find the right talent and agreeable, I will find a way and open a door for them. As long as you said, we tie it back that, listen, they actually, after that commitment, then they come back.
There has to be a transfer of knowledge or of skills or of networking, right? There has to be some compensatory balance.
Of course.
With it for the people, not for the government, but
For the people,
because these are opportunities designed to build our country.
Of course.
That we are allowing you to use to build yourself.
So truly, as you speak a good point, there probably need to be that department in the foreign affairs that actually create that sort of access for our people here.
Because for younger people who finally have an opportunity to be on or of thought or culture of their profession, the idea of coming home is very attractive. But for the fact that
it's nothing,
I don't even have access to the cutting edge.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
There's nothing here. And so we need a lot of infrastructure development needs to occur. There need to be access for the talent and to be used in a meaningful way. I was just having a chat this morning with one of my friends abroad, and he was lamenting the same thing, that after all these years, you know, we speak empowerment, but we don't seem like we're serious. Yes, Mr. Ingram built the roads, Mr. Christie created BAMSI, and probably NHI, but you know, but what? How many Bahamians? Let's look at this. Let's be real. Are you taking me out of my remit in some way, because I'm a physician, but I think I can actually speak on certain issues. Industry. We had a college here, now University of the Bahamas, that was teaching tourism for years, and tourism management, tourism, the practical aspect from chef to everything going straight up. But other than about two or three people, how many of them are actually senior levels in these mega hotels that we have? Not only that, how many hotels, my wife is from Ghana, okay? Mm-hmm. When I go to Ghana, all those many hotels.
Yeah.
I talk about a little bed and breakfast type thing. I talk about
proper
mega hotels. Proper hotels.
Yeah.
They're owned by the people, indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
How many hotels can we say that we own?
Yeah.
You understand?
There's a deep culture, right? Like this is a question that requires interrogation. Because how do you be the premier provider of tourist services for decades and decades?
And you don't...
And you don't see people at the top. You don't see the inculcation of local ideas. But there's no ownership.
There's no ownership.
But more importantly, because Bahamians don't believe they're supposed to own it.
The young child in school, even at QC, all his job is to see is, man, listen, how I can get out to finish the school and probably offer some towels to some guests, for car, etc. like that. Rather than saying, listen, I'm going to own that property or I'm going to own a competitive property just as good as them.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got a text here and then we're going to go to one of these questions because I want to, let's start talking politics, right? Although we tend to let politics consume everything. That's why I wanted to, let's talk a little bit of culture.
Everything is politics, my dear.
Well, I got a text here that says, good morning. I find it interesting that this is a conversation because it shouldn't matter which dialect people choose to use. My own will never change. But it's an interesting conversation because if you want to look at the development of Caribbean nations in developed nations, right? You want to look at how, like, for instance, Jamaica. Jamaicans are all over the world. Mm-hmm. Jamaicans are a brand culturally, right? And professionally, they are everywhere and they are at the top. And you look at the Bahamas and you wouldn't necessarily say the same thing, except Bahamians are everywhere
they are there.
And at the top.
And they are impacting wherever they are. But we haven't branded it, as
and
you
because
say.
We assimilate and we the accent of the country that we're in and we take on the culture of the country that we're in, those Bahamians don't get prominence as Bahamians. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They get prominence as citizens of the countries that they are in. And that's why the conversation about dialect matters. We're not saying that people are wrong for whatever they do, but it's an interesting insight or a way to look in at us.
Well, I forgive me. Like I said, I ain't gonna fault nobody for taking on another. To me, I am who I am, and that's who I am. I'm comfortable and I'm happy, and I don't even think about it any longer.
Right, and what the conversation causes us to assess or look at is. If you grew up in a household like I grew up, right? My mother went, I think she went to government high as well, and she went to school in the States, and I think she went to school in England for a little bit. But I went to QC, and I grew up speaking proper English. I'm more British than some of the British people I went to boarding school with. And when I got into a boarding school, right, they chose me to be the head acolyte. The prefect of the chapel.
Because you were sick.
No. You know why? I asked them. I said, man, look at you. How you all could... Me? And you know what she said? She said, listen, of the whole year, you're the only person that consistently genuflected when you went into the chapel.
Culture.
You lived that church. You understood it. It was natural to you. And that's why you got the position, right? And so to the texter... Right. At first, it seems like just a divisive conversation that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. But it's an opportunity to understand why we are the way we are and to help younger people understand who they are. And then that's the point at which they make that decision for themselves.
Well, you know, it's very important to know thyself.
Right. And it's important for Bahamian in the diaspora to know thyself. And in the 21st century.
Even more so. And there's no reason to, you know, everybody laud the Jamaican accent, et cetera. And sometimes we even find ourselves trying to speak a little Jamaican just to create a point. But I'll tell you something. When I walk the streets in the United Kingdom and certainly engage with persons, when I speak, a lot of them ask me, where this accent from? That sounds so nice. To me, I just accept it for what it is. But it's interesting that I've heard that commentary many a times. It's a beautiful accent. So to them, it's an appealing thing.
Mm-hmm. And see, for nationalists, right, perhaps the important discussion is how do we grow this country, understanding that we have to go out to do it, right? That the small island developing state requires a massive focus on going out into the world to build itself up on the ground.
Indeed.
Right? And so... But let's get into politics, right?
Okay.
I got a big, well...
Listen, like a disclosure.
Yes.
I don't speak on behalf of my party. I speak absolutely. As a Bahamian.
You are not a PLP representative
I'm a Bahamian.
In this discussion. Yeah. Right. Although I will ask you, let's just start with that voice.
That's my voice pitch.
Right? You ran in 2017.
Yeah.
You lost, but we know St. Anne's seat is up.
That's luck. That's yeah. luck, Dan. That's but I enjoyed the process.
Yeah. What's the difference between, like, from looking on the outside now, what's the difference between this 2021 PLP and that 2017 PLP?
Well, to begin with, you have a new leader.
Yeah.
All right. You have a new leader who actually brings a different vision and who have a different perspective. And I think also what you'll find is the I'll be very straight with you. Sometimes I look at the party and I don't even recognize it. Mm-hmm. But the base has been broadened. What they have been able to do is, to some people's chagrin, they have been able to bring in other talents from other sides or other thought processes and actually try to mesh them together. So you have the people, veterans, you could use that word, so people who have more experience with a lot of younger faces, to be hopefully mentored and guided along mm-hmm. the right process. And then you seem to find people from across the other aisle who might have befriended someone or, you know, because friendship is important. You know, one thing about relationships is important. And certainly if we have a unified or a focused goal to just move the country forward, then certainly there's nothing wrong with having an olive branch extended. So in short, we have a new leadership. We seem to have a lot of new faces and a healthy input of younger faces and young talent.
But that's good. A lot of faces I don't know, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of people I don't know. I'm a part of that is my fault mm-hmm. for not being aware of the work that they do. Mm-hmm. And if you, mm-hmm. to get elected, you had to be doing something. Mm-hmm. You can't just run on a ticket, mm-hmm. you know, of a popular party mm-hmm. and get elected. So good faces are good, mm-hmm. right? New voices are good. But I got this question for you. How do we integrate Bahamians into the diaspora, in the diaspora, into development and governance without becoming another Guyana, where some Americans of Guyanese descent have more influence over local politics than the citizens on the ground in Guyana?
Well, I think first thing, it must be your access. You must be able to engage those persons abroad and not dismiss their possible contributions to the advancement and the transformation of your country. And too often we have talents, serious talents. I mean, just the other day, just 2 days ago, I heard about a young lady named, maybe even Rule, who actually left the Bahamas after high school, went to the United States, now has a PhD in mathematics, and she's being rewarded, received over there, and mm-hmm. celebrated.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered, I know she got family here. Yeah. She probably comes home for Junkanoo every year. She probably, mm-hmm. all right. Active attempt to engage her in the curriculum development in our country.
Yeah.
And if so, is it going to be a meaningful traction towards it? Just the other day, there's somebody in the, one of those pharmaceutical companies in Texas who actually is a serious researcher. How have we touched them on the shoulder? Have we really made, I'm sure they come home. Other than the basketballers and the baseballers, have we really making an intentional effort to actually engage them in moving right. our country forward or creating avenues for Bahamians here to have exposure over there with a view for commitment and returning? I'm not sure. And if not, I'm certainly open to anybody else correcting me on that. But I don't think that is the case. We all know about them, but how many of them are really being engaged in a meaningful way? And because of that, they come home and they realize that they can contribute. But sometimes it's also niche protection. People don't want to allow you space to develop, or they obfuscate you or frustrate you, to use another word.
Yeah.
So I'm doing
this
well.
Abroad.
You know, even myself. I came back this year too. That was my second time returning to the Bahamas. I came back with a fellowship degree. Man, I was frustrated here with the local boards, the medical boards. When I went back to the United Kingdom, the door was open for me. So you say to yourself, you know, truly as the Bible say, you know, a prophet is not without honor, but in his own country.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just sharing that with you. Yeah. That's the experience for a lot of Bahamians abroad. They come in. the country running without them, so people don't create space for them to actively engage. So guess what? We survive, you know. We do okay as a country, but we don't move forward as a country.
Right. And so for me, how do we open that up? I there's just too much talent outside the country.
A hell of a lot.
Being used by other countries. And I can reiterate it. But talent developed with opportunities intended to grow this country, right? Mm-hmm. So you go abroad through the frustration because it's plantation model education here. Mm-hmm. These people, the teachers and lecturers, the people literally think that they're supposed to beat up on you. They tell you, well, we're making you better students. So when you go abroad, it'll be easier on you. You need this frustration and sufferation because that's what some of y'all institutions put students through in this process of learning to become better students. And that's not necessarily the case. But after going through those experiences, right, young people do not want to come back and contribute without being compensated, right?
Of course. Well, I mean, if you create space for expats in your own country, certainly I'd like to believe that you could create that same space for me.
Absolutely. Even if you get to build it on Frank Watson Boulevard. But that's just an inside joke between me and Frank Watson Boulevard. Don't mind that. So let's get sort of back into political.
I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
When I came in some many years ago, one time, and one of my parcels was lost at the airport. And you know what I meant to the persons at the desk to complain? And I said, listen, and if my parcel lost, you could pay me back. They said, oh, we don't do that for Bahamians. So you treat me differentially in my own country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think. Do you think the state sees that as problematic?
They don't even recognize it. They don't even think about it.
Do you think the political class is aware of itself? Listen, we got to go to a break.
Okay.
We got to go to a break. But I can throw that question out there. Do you think the political class is aware of itself? And when we get back from the break, we're going to get into that. So long to get to the break. You're listening to 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green and Dr. Charles Clark. And we will be right back.
We believe in relationship banking. We take pride in getting to know our clients. You have access to knowledgeable, approachable ambassadors and financial coaches so that we can recommend the best product for you. At Fidelity, we care about you. From your financial health to your physical health, we can relate to you because we're just like you. Come and start your relationship banking experience with us today. Visit us online at fidelitygroup.com. Visit any of our branches in Nassau or Grand Bahama, or phone 356-7764 in Nassau, or 352-6676 for Freeport.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen anytime, anywhere, on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Like what you're hearing on the show? Want to support the conversation? Sponsor On The Clock today. Call Janet Lees at 302-2304. That's 302-2304. Be the solution. Sponsor On The Clock with Erin Green, where she dissects, we discuss, and you decide.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good morning. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green, and my guest today is Dr. Charles Clark. Now, really, I come here to ask Dr. Clark all kind of political questions, right? But I realize that this conversation about governance and development, right, from a diasporic perspective, talking to somebody that has lived and worked both in the Bahamas and abroad, right, and not to say what are the questions, well, not to say what are the right answers, but what are the questions that we should be asking to get a better sense of the options available to us, right, as solutions for problems. So, Dr. Clark, I wanted to ask you, once I learned that you were once a president of the doctors' union, right, I wanted to ask you, you think we have the ability to fix the healthcare system on our own without international, without public-private partnerships with international entities or multinational corporations? Do you think we can fix the healthcare system in this archipelagic nation?
Well, it all depends on what you define as fix. Because certainly if you just want a modicum of care, yes, we have that capacity.
Yeah.
If you want to actually have healthcare delivery for every person, or universal health care on every place, on every rock and cranny in this archipelago, certainly we're going to need assistance. And public-private partnership is important in terms of initiating and creating this drive. We can also have some novel advisors, talent, the indigenous talents we have here, mm-hmm. to meet certain needs in the meantime whilst it takes us to develop that.
Mm-hmm.
But do we have the conviction, and as a community, do we have the confidence in what they call it? There's a word in business that they say,
You can cause my bank officer to call me. I don't know nothing about business.
Basically, a repurposing you or something
like that.
All right?
Right.
Because BAME is we are exacting some people. We're quite demanding. We're only 45 minutes outside Miami where you can get, quote unquote, good health care. Even though Miami is part of the U.S. system, which has, they spend the most for the least outcome.
Yeah.
But everybody still believe that
Miami
the U.S.
is
the best. But I'll share something with you, man. Right down the road, Cuba. Cuba actually has been able to work on a budget and create very great talent to the point where just about a month ago, our own health minister recruited talent from there.
Yeah.
So I think that perhaps what we need to do is not dismiss the United States and the Europe, but also try to look southwardly and say, listen, what can we garner from there? How can we foster the... You know, I'm an Afrocentric person.
Mm-hmm.
And I do believe that we tend to, and it's by tend that they want us to always look north or European or American, whereby what we need to do is now create regional strength,
mm-hmm.
and maybe even regional strength with Latin America, regional strength with Africa. You understand? Because mm-hmm. guess what? There's talent there and there's expertise there at spots, but certainly we need to develop those other spots. And so similarly, with our local talent here, I'm not saying that you would want a nurse doing a C-section down in Anagua. No. All right. But how can we actually group the south of the islands with some sort of regional entity such that they can get the healthcare they need?
Yeah.
Perhaps what we need to do is actually have some think out of the box and says, listen, maybe we'll have visiting consultants go down there on a regular basis, along with a team of doctors, staying down there for a period of time, addressing this need. Pediatrics go on Monday, obstetrics and gynae go on Tuesday, that sort of way. And we also need to take the pressure and pain of the people on the islands away. Because guess what? I have patients who have prostate cancer. They're differentially, they're marginalized. When they want to come to Nassau for a surgery, they have to leave their job on an Abaco. Let's say Abaco is a vibrant country. They have to find a ticket to come to Nassau.
Yeah.
All right? They have to find a place to stay because guess what? They may not have that surgery, have that intervention today. So that's a 2 weeks. They out of pocket for about 2 weeks. Who paying that cost for them people?
Yeah.
And are they not behaving people?
Right. And why are the policies reflecting the realities of life in an archipelagic exterior?
That's what we need.
Why would the citizen have to pay extra for something that government should have already taken into account? But I want to take it one step further. Mm. Let's talk about political will.
Mm.
Because I'm 45. I don't really need to believe in the fairy tale that my government wakes up every morning and they think, okay, is Erin Green okay? What does she need? I don't live in that fairy tale. But suddenly somebody cares about tourists in this town. Mm-hmm. From every signal I get, the tourists is a priority focus for plenty of people in this town. Why haven't we fixed the healthcare system so we could ensure that our tourism product is not just sound, but that we could do the very basic for the people that we invite and take their money to come to our country? Is it a lack of political will entirely? Like, we just can't see the importance of healthcare? Or is it that we make, contingency plans for tourists? Because like you say, we only 45 minutes from the States. If there's a real emergency, we can put them on a helicopter, get them out, and the Bahamian people can pay for it because tourism.
Well, I think there is a political will to initiate change. And that's been evident with NHI. But it depends on which government in power at that time and how you define what NHI product you want to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
My party actually created a universal plan that actually still needed some work in tweeting, all right? But the other party came in and they cut back on the budget, etc. like that. They launched it, don't get me wrong, but it's still not with the grand plan that what we initially had envisioned. One of the reasons why there was a redefinition of this NHI initiative and launch was because there are certain persons, and we call them cartels, quote unquote, who actually want to preserve things as they are, because guess what? That's their market protection. That's how they make their cheddar.
Yeah.
All right? So they're not going to actually initiate new changes that actually give that capital out to that they had and budgeted for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a government will, but the implementers actually will frustrate you.
Yeah. And the question is, can the government reasonably take the steps necessary
They're the government, they can. They can.
Well, I was talking about strong arm in the private sector.
The way I look at it like this. You contracted for the government to give you to offer services at this particular level in this discipline. But you also have your foot in the private sector. I have no problem with that, you know. But then again, meet my obligations, all right?
Yeah.
And meet my targets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't, guess what? It was nice having this relationship with you. And yes, you are Bahamian, and you are worthy of... But guess what? You're not meeting your part of the contractual
agreement.
So let me bring somebody else who can take care of my people.
True. I would that.
And I increase them too, you know.
Back to that question about the political class, right? Because during the pandemic, watch this. During the pandemic, we knew the healthcare system, public healthcare system was broken, right? But it wasn't a big panic because people still, in the back of their mind, said, I could get to doctor's hospital. Mm-hmm. I could get to the States. I could get to doctor's hospital. I could get to the States. But when doctor's hospital said, look here, your luck is buck. We are broke down, not broken, but we full to capacity. And when the U.S. said, hey, there's nothing flying. There's nothing flying. It don't matter how good your money is, nothing flying. Then the political class exposed themselves. There was a panic. And fixing the hospital was priority number one squared. Mm-hmm. Those conditions shifted. There was no real urgency attached to this discussion. Do you think the political class is aware of itself? Like, do they realize that we could see them, that they are a thing? And how do we keep them in check? Because it seems to me, as long as a certain percentage of people, or what I like to call the political class, have an option B or option C, there will be no real movement to fix the hospital.
Well, it's voices like yourself, all right, and leadership. Even you find that in some ways, you'd expect the church to actually be speaking on certain issues, but they seem to be somewhat compromised in themselves also. So you don't find that voice, but certainly it would be some spaces like yourself. Let's not forget that the young kids also feeling, living the experience, you know, and they also have their own little network of voices going on and speaking out on certain issues. So we have to find a way to integrate them and actually give them the platform to express themselves. You know, they had this previous administration, I forget his name. One of them, the Speaker of the House, the ex-Speaker of the House, he created this thing called Mudri. Mudri created this concept. He was probably trying to save himself. Obviously, he was trying to save himself during that difficult time, called the Open Parliament. I think that's a commendable idea. Okay? Because guess what? you can have you younger beasts farting around talking to them people in the House of Assembly. You can answer the people,
mm-hmm.
and you have to answer, and you don't have nobody, you don't have no blocker in front of you. So I've always admired that concept, and I'm hoping that we as a party can revisit it, because yeah. I think it's important for the Bahamian people to hear, to be able to question you directly, and to get a response from you without all the fluff and fart going around.
Absolutely. So I think we get time for, I will read this text, and then the last question says, good show, Ms. Green, and I like the mindset of your guest, Dr. Clark. Sounds like a true indigenous Bahamian.
I am.
Who know who he is.
I am.
But the text says, where you come from? Were you hiding? This is the first, the text is saying this is the first time I heard of him. Please share his main vision or goals for the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, now overdue, in future, at least 3 main goals. Okay, so I had a question there. If you were PM, tell us, what's your first initiative?
That's a heavy job, man. That's a burden. That's a crown heavy.
I didn't say you had to go to work or do work. You just gotta do one thing. What would that one thing be?
Well, as a physician, I would do is try to transform the healthcare delivery. And the only way that can happen is by actually creating a better infrastructure and actually creating the resources, the human talent and resources. And it goes beyond doctors and nurses, you know. Mm-hmm. It goes to the support care, those the labs to maintain the facility. You understand?
Yes.
One of the things that I've always found very interesting is, why can't we have a ministry of maintenance? All right. Why do I have to have a hospital that have their own maintenance department, and who have to get sign off from PHA? You need Ministry of Maintenance.
You need a culture of appreciation for maintenance. See,
yes.
And that's why that conversation about language and dialect is so important that we could look into. Because guess what? If you think you're a plantation and you think somebody else owns the place and you think somebody else makes the decisions, then you ain't worrying about fixing up the place. And we see that translated in our land usage when we look at the landlord-tenant relationship, right? And there's some really good dynamics. There's some people who have some really great situations, right? Mm-hmm. But in that, the sense of ownership, who is responsible for fixing it up, and what am I willing to live in and through in the face of this little contention and argument? Mm-hmm. But let's go. Oh, they gone. I sorry, callers. This is a hot conversation, and sometimes it ain't always time to get in. Go
and
on,
two,
Dr. Clark.
And two other things. Well, they say three, right? So the three things. So the healthcare, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I would actually think about is this. We need to reform the central bank. There's a bunch of Bahamians who have money outside that don't have the same sort of access
to my bank accounts.
In other words, I can't have money in American currency. I can't have money in pounds. I can only have X amount of money. So that means all that $2 million, $3 million I have on the outside, that's serving that country. That's not serving my country.
Uh-huh.
Why can't we have that inside our country? We have Canadian Bank of Canada holding our country hostage, holding us by the nuts. You understand? Foreigners can come in here and use our commercial bank up and down and transform a Bahamian, and I can't do the same.
Now, listen, I appreciate how that just run you hot, because I didn't put my money in a bank. I am 45. I didn't put my money in a bank for 30 years because, and I think the government thinks the same way, because somebody could come take it. It's not yours. And I think that because...
You better believe it.
Because ideologically, we still don't believe in our own ownership. We don't believe that we own it, or we don't believe that we will do what it takes to protect it when the time comes. Look here, we are all out of time. I got a text here that says, I like your guest, and he sounds like a patriot, but he needs to stop saying my party. Well,
I had a disclosure earlier, didn't I?
Yeah, but right, and for the audience, right, he's speaking as somebody, not as a representative of that party, but as somebody who may be a member of that party and aligns with the principles of that party.
Of course.
But what they're saying is they like you, but they can't like you if that's your party. That's what they say.
I made a disclosure, and sometimes I might have overstepped, but certainly I just want you to know, I speak with conviction and passion. As a Bahamian.
Right.
I'm true to my colors, all right?
Right, and I think we stayed away from the partisan politics and even the interrogation of it per se. But this is the last thing that I wanted to ask you, and I didn't get a chance to ask you, right? We're quick to demonize and vilify Bahamian politicians. That's why I sort of take a different tact when I bring politically exposed people on my show, because people think right away you're going to beat them up. Join politics, right? I realize a lot of people are consumed by the various political cultures, right? I'm going to call off three things, and just as we end the show, I want you to tell me if they are true, real or not. I think these are three political cultures that are doing us harm and we need to change. The first is our government and the political class act like they have more dollars than cents.
Yes.
Two, loan checks but no balances. Everybody getting paid no matter what their valuation say.
I agree with you again.
And party over people.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We are all out of time, but I got to have you back. Not as a politician, and not just talk about politics, but to talk about development and governance.
There's so much more we could say, man. I would like to have shared. And so to say, yeah, look forward to another engagement.
Right. It's important for people to get a sense of who you are and the context from which you speak.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. And there was no
great,
pitches.
I enjoyed. I was kind of frightened, I can tell you the truth. But then again, I enjoyed the discussion and the diatribe.
Okay? Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. And the text here says, all of us are one. And I think that's the best message ever. I'm sorry, Texas. I can't get to all of your texts. We're all out of time. They came in really late. Thank you, Dr. Clark.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And to the audience,
thank you, Bahamas.
Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Guardian Radio AM is up next with Jay and Kenny. You guys have a great day.